The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
And a good morning. It's hour number two on this day number two of the month of April. Hope all is well with you. Mark Davis on 660 AM. The Answer. A number of things to bring up to you. Some of them took flight during our Mike and Mark segment. Others are things that I just had here on my sheet of stuff to cover today. And you know how to get a hold of us. 866-660-5759. 866-660-5759. Which is also, pay attention, the ViaScan of Las Colinas text line. Whoa, what happened there? Our good friends at Patriot Mobile remain our mobile partners and remain our advertising buddies forever. But it's the ViaScan of Las Colinas text line moving forward. So every time I mention that, know two things. Number one, 866-660-5759 is how you text us. And oh, by the way, ViaScan of Las Colinas is how you live a long, happy, knowledgeable life about what's going on in your body. The ViaScan of Las Colinas text line. Fire it up! 866-660-5759. All right, as I mentioned, there is a push. You might have seen the headline, a push to rename an airport in Washington after Trump. And you're thinking, whoa, Mark, no, didn't they just, they renamed National after Reagan. You don't mess with Reagan. No, we're not talking about National. National is right there hard by across the Potomac from downtown Washington. That's where all the members of Congress fly in and out. That's where you get the close flights in and out. We're talking about Dulles. Dulles International Airport, named after John Foster Dulles, out 40 minutes west of D.C., the international airport, kind of like National is LaGuardia, Dulles is JFK, if you want to make a New York comparison there. DFW is every, or National is like Love, and Dulles is like DFW, whatever you want to do. Anyway, that's the one they're thinking, at least some folks are thinking, about renaming after Trump. Is this a bit? Sure it is. Will it happen? No, at least not now. But it's there's messaging intended, and let's take a look at what this is. A group of House Republicans is pushing to rename Washington, D.C.'s main international airport, Dulles International Airport, after former President Trump. Representative Guy Reschenthaler, R. of Pennsylvania, the House GOP's chief deputy whip, introduced the bill Friday with six co-sponsors, including one from Texas. Mr. Reschenthaler says, in my lifetime, our nation has never been greater than under the leadership of President Donald Trump. There's no better symbol of freedom, prosperity, and strength than hearing welcome to Trump International Airport as they land on American soil. If passed, the Washington Dulles International Airport shall, after the date of enactment, be known and designated as the Donald J. Trump International Airport. Any reference in law, regulation, map, document, paper, or other record shall be considered to be a reference to the Donald J. Trump International Airport. It's backed by Congressman Michael Waltz of Florida, Andy Ogles of Tennessee, Chuck Fleischman of Tennessee, Paul Gosar of Arizona, Barry Moore of Alabama, and Troy Nels of Texas. Obviously, it's not going to be taken up by the Democrat-controlled Senate. If passed, of course, it would be the second D.C. area airport named for a Republican commander-in-chief after 1998 when it became Reagan. And it's funny because, as you know, I grew up in the Maryland suburbs of D.C. after being born in Texas, but it was always National Airport, National Airport, National Airport. And when they renamed it after Ronald Reagan, it was like conversationally what's going to happen. I mean, now we talk about Globe Life Field where the Rangers play because it's the new stadium. How many people really was AmeriQuest and various other things? But it was always the ballpark. It was just the ballpark. You know, it's people tend to cleave to names that are drilled into their brains for years and years. So the question was, it's nice to name it after Reagan. It was very nice to name National Airport after Reagan. But how many people are really, really going to refer to it as that? It took a while, but these days they do. You know, so, you know, 30 years ago, it's like, well, I'm flying out of National. People often now talk about flying out of Reagan. Or sometimes the hybrid Reagan National. Congressman Paul Gosar said about naming Dulles after Trump, "I can see no more fitting recognition than naming both airports in our nation's capital after America's two best presidents, DCA after President Reagan, and Dulles, which I think is IAD, after President Trump." Dulles is a busy international hub, critical for lawmakers. It's the fourth largest airport in terms of land area. When I was growing up, Dulles is like one long corridor. That's it. DFW has all these terminals, A, B, C, D, E, soon to be F. I mean, it's like its own country. Dulles is just one long, just you got one end, you got the other end, and that's it. And sometimes you're in Dulles, and you're in the main terminal, and you have to get on like a big people carrier thing that takes you out to where the actual planes are at various hub terminals. But when I was a kid, Dulles was like a wonderland. You know, because number one, it probably meant you were leaving the country or picking somebody up who was from another country. And there's this famous George Carlin bit about, you know, when you're a kid, you always like to play spy at the airport. You know there's a spy at the airport. Your job? Find them. And Dulles was just that kind of environment. So anyway, we don't tend also to name things after living people. That can get, I mean, I get nervous when we name schools after living people, even when they're just really magnificent, stand up, salt of the earth, living people, because you just never know. So anyway, well, that's just one of those ideas whose time may at some point come. Well, there's an idea that has lingered, and I don't know why. Except I do know why, and it's just I plugged in to watch the last few minutes of LSU and Iowa when it was clear that Iowa was going to win, and I kind of thought they were. Caitlin Clark is just an amazing athlete, and will now be offering herself up for the WNBA. Good for her. Wish her nothing but good things. And, Iowa's kind of America's team these days in terms of their wish to have Caitlin Clark end her college career with a championship, which didn't happen last year because LSU beat them. So this was the rematch, and all kinds of attention was on LSU versus Iowa. So I didn't actually know that that LSU had bailed on the anthem. A video showed Iowa players holding hands during the Star Spangled Banner. LSU had left the court right before the anthem was played. LSU head coach Kim Mulkey was asked after the game why the team didn't come out, and she chalked it up to routine. Here's the quote Mike gave us. "Honestly, I don't even know when the anthem was played. We kind of have a routine when our players are on the floor, and they come off at the 12-minute mark. Prior to the game. I don't know. We come in. We do our pregame stuff. I'm sorry. That's nothing intentionally done." Yes, it is. She is lying. And I'm a fan of hers. I liked those national championships at Baylor. Enjoyed that. Go Bears. LSU wasn't on the floor for the national anthem last year when they played Iowa for the national championship. Tigers were defending national champs. They were tied at the half, and Caitlin Clark just came alive in the third quarter, second half. This is completely and totally race war posturing, and it's disgusting, and it is a complete snub to America, and you should know that. You should absolutely know that. All right, 8:19. Let me take the pause, and there's something else you should know, because there are people who want you to not believe this either. My buddy David Marcus has a great piece lending clarity to whether or not it was just, hey, the White House being nice, or whether the National Trans Day of Visibility was absolutely an attack on Christianity. we will discuss next. Mark Davis, 819.
I'm up on the tying wires. One side's ice and one is fire.
I was almost 15.
It's a circus game with you.
In 1972, when Leon Russell's Tightrope,
I'm up on the tightrope,
which is the actual name,
one side's hate and one is hope,
was on the radio, and I said, this is fun. Kind of quirky. So I went and got the album called Carney. It was actually the third Leon Russell album. This Masquerade on there. Dude is genius. And became a fan at that moment. The great Leon Russell would have been 82 today. Passed away back in 16. Son of Oklahoma. Buried up in Tulsa. Boom, boom, boom.
See?
Such greatness. All right. So many people were trying to tell you, hey, there's been a trans day of visibility every March 31st. So, you know, every once in a while, it's going to be on Easter. Even when it was on Easter last time when Obama was president, Obama White House didn't, you know, contort itself in 15 different directions to jam it down your throat. David Marcus writes in Human Events. This Easter, the president of the United States and his White House made a clear and distinct decision to force Transgender Day of Visibility into the spotlight on the holiest day of the Christian calendar. At first, this was denied. We were told that Biden had simply signed a standard declaration celebrating the holiday, which we were given to understand had been held on March 31st since 2009. But then, on Easter itself, the social media posts started rolling in. Biden praised Transgender Day of Visibility. Then his Vice President Kamala Harris, then Department of Justice U.S. attorneys joined the onslaught. So spare us, please. This was not Joe Biden scratching out his John Hancock to name a post office after some popular Little League coach in Poughkeepsie. It was a slap in the face to all Christians. It was little different from the climate protesters chanting support for Hamas, who interrupted Easter services at St. Patrick's in New York City. Just like Joe Biden, those protesters were saying that what they were upset about matters more than Christians' ability to celebrate the resurrection of their Lord and Savior in peace. It is a tactic we see over and over again against Christians, and generally only against Christians. Let's be honest. If Christians had invaded a mosque in New York City to protest during services, they'd be in jail facing hate crimes. This cynical method of attacking Christians is becoming more and more common, and it has two central moves. The first part of this operation is cloyingly and annoyingly familiar. It involves that uniquely leftist penchant to insist everybody must be made uncomfortable in order to facilitate social change. Oh, you want to watch your kid react joyously to his Easter basket followed by mass and a nice dinner? Sorry, you got to spend today being miserable thinking about how bigoted you are toward trans people. It is literally the job of the left, they assure us, be they politicians, actors, or pop singers, to make us all as uncomfortable as possible. Thanks, guys. But this is only the beginning. The second part of the operation is far more insidious. Because once you've been made sufficiently uncomfortable, you are primed for your Christian faith to be used against you by people who don't know the catechism from a Christmas tree. They will insist that if Jesus were here today, which he is, though they don't acknowledge that, he would say that you must embrace transgenderism on the grounds that he loved everyone. This, of course, is a facile and ultimately self-serving version of a Christ who basically tells you, do whatever you want. Furthermore, this historical Jesus, whom they cite is not the Son of God who still lives with us, but rather just another moral philosopher, they're not discussing Christianity but some Western set of moral precepts based on Christianity, which is not remotely the same thing. In fact, cafeteria Catholic Joe Biden is pushing almost the same Islamic version of Jesus Christ, one in which Jesus is this great teacher, all-around nice guy, but not to be taken too seriously or literally. This is precisely how Catholic Joe Biden finds himself as the head of a political party that not only condones but celebrates abortion. And make no mistake, many of these summer soldiers on the sacred honestly believe that Christ would condone murdering a baby in the womb. It's not that far a stretch. But if there were, on this past Easter Sunday, a bright side to Biden's betrayal of his faith, it was in the backlash. And I don't just mean the angry responses from Christians who will no longer be bullied by the woke left on the basis of their supposed privilege. I don't just mean the protesters at St. Pat's being manhandled away from the altar. What I mean are three-word messages like, "He is risen." What I really mean are the pictures of happy families and flowers and wonderful meals celebrating life, conquering death. Of course, Christ compels us to love those who identify as transgender, just as he compels us to love doctors who mutilate children on the basis of fashionable psychobabble. You see, those of us who worship the Lord Jesus Christ understand very well that he loved the sinner and hated the sin. For us, there's no contradiction in this. In fact, in its great mystery, this concept opens up not only God's love, but the eternal life promised and proved on Easter. David Marcus in Human Events. Nice job. 8:31, Mark Davis, 6:60 a.m. The Answer. Into the newsroom we go. Here's Nikki Whaley.
I'm gonna hold who needs holding, mend what needs mending, walk what needs walking, though it means an extra mile.
I always liked this guy.
Say what needs saying, 'cause we're only here for a little while.
The very first top five hit in the country charts for Billy Dean, who is 62 today, native of Florida, out in the panhandle by Tallahassee, born in Quincy, Florida. Only here for a little while, Billy the Kid, Only the Wind, If There Hadn't Been You. There's some 90s hits there from Billy Dean. So happy birthday.
Putting off until tomorrow.
All right, 866-660-5759. That's where you call us. That is the ViaScan of Las Colinas text line, which has sprung to life on a number of things I'm going to check with you on in just a moment. But last night, House Speaker Mike Johnson was on with Hannity, and amid some of the stuff we talked about yesterday and today, the seemingly horrible week for Biden. And this was Mike's premise yesterday. He's like, wasn't it a terrible week for Biden, like when you were away and, you know, just terrible things were happening? Well, yeah, but you know my definition of political damage. Political damage only happens if people who love you stop loving you. I mean, politically speaking, if people who, if your supporters suddenly just aren't supporters anymore. Let's take a look at somebody who thinks that might be happening before we hear Speaker Johnson on Hannity. James Carville, I mean, say what you will about the raging Cajun. If there's a concern he has, it is the fate of the Democrat Party. And he said over the weekend that poll numbers showing the Democrat Party losing support among young minority voters is horrifying. Quote from James, "I've been very vocal about this. It's horrifying, horrifying. Our numbers are," I'm sorry, don't do Carville. Mary, give me a sandwich. "It's horrifying, our numbers among younger voters, particularly younger blacks, younger Latinos, younger people of color, particularly males. We're not shedding them. They are leaving in droves." Well, yes, they are. I have a theory. It's because let's say you are, and by the way, this has nothing to do with race. Let's say you are 27, yeah, late 20s. Your adult life has been, your brief adult life has been strewn across two presidencies, Biden and Trump. During which of those have you been doing better? And by the way, when you're 27, you're supposed to be doing better than you were when you were 22. When you're 30, you're supposed to be doing better than when you were 25. There are a ton of people who have just come through their 20s and their early 20s, a supposed time of struggle, and I'm sure it was, or there's that certain struggle of the early 20s, early adulthood, was under Trump. Economy booming, things happening, inflation under control. Then COVID, you know, we destroy our own economy from COVID. And then we elect Biden, doing ourselves no favors whatsoever. So that's why a lot of young Americans have taken a look at this. And again, that large group of not necessarily so ideologically wired people who aren't necessarily following a beacon of liberalism or a beacon of conservatism, they're just kind of like, when was I doing better? As Carville famously said in 1992, "It's the economy, stupid. Well, if it's the economy this time, as Mike says, I like our chances. These polls, last year, a Gallup survey found that 66% of black adults leaned or identified as Democrat compared to 19. And that's a 19-point dip from the advantage Democrats held in 2020 and the closest margin in like a quarter century. The poll found that 47% of Hispanics identified as Democrats, 35% Republican. When has it been that close? Just as recently as 2021, it was 57-26. Now it's 47-35. The Hispanic Democrat-Republican tilt. So these are obviously key Democrat voting blocks. And a USA Today Suffolk University poll published in January found that Biden's support among black voters had dropped from 87% to 63%. Now, understand something. So when you see a poll that says that Biden's support among blacks is at 63%, does that mean, wow, Trump's going to get 37% of the black vote? No, not necessarily. Anything's possible. Everything's on the table. But what will ultimately happen, there's a big difference between asking an African-American voter, like right now, are you thrilled with Biden, when the answer might be, oh, not really, and then asking those same African-American folk on November 5th, who you're voting for, you know, because then all other things being equal, they'll come home to the Democrat Party. Many will. Some won't. And maybe far more won't than in recent elections. And this is what has Democrats from James Carville all the way to the White House, shall we say, somewhat concerned. Because when you boil all this down, and now let's pivot to what Speaker Johnson said on Hannity last night, this was, again, on the heels of the crazy transgender day of visibility disaster. And Speaker Johnson's point that maybe everybody's coming after Biden for this, that Biden might not have even known what he was signing. He might not have even really known what he was doing. I mean, on what is now referred to as Oyster Bunny Day, it's just you just cannot ever be sure that the supposed leader of the free world has a grasp on what is going on in front of his face at any given day. But ultimately,
this election is about showing the contrast between these two visions for America. And this proclamation on Easter Sunday is just a great example of that. This radical leftist progressive vision for the country is not who we are as Americans. And I think most of the country agrees with us, Sean. And I think that's why we're going to have a very successful election in November.
All right, let's look at, I'm not really sure why, maybe I understand why Kevin McCarthy resigned, but then you have Bill Johnson resigned, Brian Higgins resigned, Mike Gallagher is resigning.
Mm-hmm. And timing his exit so that his seat can't be filled.
And your very slim margin, the slimmest of any House Speaker in history, has gotten even smaller. And look, I feel the same frustration that many other conservatives feel, and that is that they want the Republican majority, you know, united on certain principles like, okay, securing the border and balancing the budget, those two things. But you can't get that consensus. Now, it has now resulted in Marjorie Taylor Greene threatening a motion to vacate. You apparently have been in conversations with her. What is the standing of that?
Yeah, Marjorie and I are going to talk again this week. She's frustrated, and we all are, to your point. Every conservative is frustrated about our current position. We have the smallest majority in U.S. history. We have a one-vote margin right now. So it's very difficult to move big things up the field for our principles. But here's how we're going to do it, Sean. It's a very simple formula. We will grow the majority in November. We'll win back the Senate, and Donald Trump will be returned to the White House. If we do a couple of simple things, we have to show what we're for. That's what Vivek was saying earlier. He's exactly right. That's what we've been saying. You know, I talk a lot about the seven core principles of American conservatism. It's individual freedom, limited government, the rule of law, peace through strength, fiscal responsibility, free markets, human dignity. These are the things that made America the most exceptional nation in the history of the world. We're for those foundational principles, and the Democrats, the progressives, are not. So we got to talk about what we're for, and also, to your point, we've got to unify. When you have such a small majority, if the Republicans will stand together, we have much better, obviously, negotiation strength when we're dealing with Democrats in the Senate and a Democrat in the White House. And finally, we've got to move our conservative agenda, at least incrementally. And we can do that. We can show the American people we can fight on these things. Look, we're for standing up to China and securing the border and protecting American jobs and unleashing American energy and changing the budgeting and spending habits of Washington. But it takes every single Republican in the House to stand together to do that.
And it's as Republicans, this is why we always have these circular firing squads. And a lot of it is based on the inability to absorb the fact that Trump is the nominee and that Republicans are by and large fine with that. So just this is there's a whole lot of deprogramming and tough love that lies ahead. 866-660-5759. We're in Dallas. Michael, welcome. Happy Tuesday. How are you?
I'm doing just great, Mark. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
The reason I called in, you would help us a lot. When you see the pull up on YouTube, social media, it says blacks for Trump.
Right.
This is African Americans for Trump. Man, please. Drop the African stuff. We're not from Africa. We're three generations. We are three generations removed, four generations removed from Africa. I hate it. Should we say British Americans? Should we say Irish Americans, German Americans? No, we're Americans. Quit putting that a moniker on as black. Just say black. Just say black Americans. Forget about those people who want to be politically correct.
I just enormously love you. Because I've always been comfortable referring to black folk, white folk, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I find that most black folk don't care. I think, the African-American reference I made was actually reading from the news story. But will I occasionally throw that in? I probably will. I don't. It's a lot of syllables. Black works fine.
I know.
It works fine. And every once in a while, it'll trip you up because sometimes you'll be, in another country. Like we just came back from Aruba. And I swear, at one point, somebody was referring to whether or not the cab driver was white or African-American. Well, he's not American by any stretch. He's Dutch, for crying out loud, or native or something like that. So it can – let me ask you this. How many do you think it's only the leaning Republican or leaning conservative folks who reject African American and say, "Look, just call me black"?
Oh no!
Yeah.
If you really go on social media and check, you'll see there's been a move afoot of people saying, "Let's just stop this." Smokey Robinson is the most famous guy. Did a 7-minute monologue. He did a poem and he said, "I am a black American. I'm not from Africa." I mean, it's a beautiful poem that he wrote, and he rehearsed different places. But it's right. I mean, it's always a way, and I'm not going to attack anybody personally, but to me, it's always a way of making us feel like we shouldn't be here. It's always made me think like that, and I hate it.
Man, that is some passion that I love. Anything that unites is a good, good thing. And we have way too many hyphens. Michael, thank you. God, he's going to make me go look for that Smokey Robinson thing. How about if I do that while you listen to these?
People say I'm the life of the party 'cause I tell a joke or...
If we're going to throw some love to Smokey, who's 84, by the way, and doing great. Drift back about 60 years, little tracks of my tears. But this is Smokey on stage in 2020. I don't even know where the venue is. This is a remarkable sort of poetic piece, an extended one. Here's just a little bit of it. And it is called Black American.
So if we're going to go back, let's go all the way back. And if Adam was black and Eve was black, then that kind of makes it a natural fact that everybody in America is an African-American. Everybody in Europe is an African-European. Everybody in the Orient is an African-Asian, and so on and so on. That is, if the origin of man is what we're going to go on. And if one drop of black blood makes you black like they say, then everybody's black anyway. So quit trying to change my identity. I'm already who I was meant to be. I'm a black American, born and raised. And Brother James Brown wrote a wonderful phrase. Say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud. Say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud. Because I'm proud to be black. And I ain't never lived in Africa. And because my great-great-granddaddy on my daddy's side did, don't mean I want to go back. Now, I have nothing against Africa. It's where some of the most beautiful places and people in the world are found. But I've been blessed to go a lot of places in this world. If you ask me where I choose to live, I pick America, hands down. Now, by and by, we were called Negroes. And after a while, that name was banished. Anyway, Negro is just how you say black in Spanish.
So that's, I may have to post the whole thing. It's like 11 minutes, and it's all wondering. Smokey Robinson, Black American 2020. 8:58, Mark Davis. All right, coming into our next hour, let's take a look. I can't hold it at arm's length anymore. Folks are clamoring for me to, Mark, what about the whole Rashee Rice thing? Rashee Rice is a local kid football star, Richland, right? Then SMU, wide receiver, Kansas City Chiefs, Super Bowl ring, and a big old accident in which it looks like he was a part on 75 on Saturday. And for like a couple of days, it's like, the police are looking for Rashee Rice. They'd like to talk to him. Well, why can't they find him? Well, they apparently found him. What the heck is going on there? We'll take a look at that and a number of other things in our 9 o'clock hour. Do come join us. Mark Davis, 6:60 a.m. The Answer.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.